Welcome to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up with your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh. Take a trip down memory lane as we take a look at the week gone by. From The Breakfast Show with Paul Brennan.
Oil and gas.
Greenwash with Jaspreet and Don.
Right at her fingertips.
Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Counterculture with Marie Buskey.
Oh, go on.
The Truth Speaker, Tobias Tahi.
Kia ora, Tifano.
The Crunch with Cam Slater.
Oh, well, we're back in the thick of it again this week.
Real People with Jerry Pives.
In the mainstream manure.
The Dialogue with Dewa Zabor.
This is the real deal.
And of course, Up Your Brave with Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
It is super awesome to have you here.
With a host of contributors from here to Norway and everywhere in between. It's your weekly wrap-up right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody, and happy International Women's Day. If you're listening to the live stream, welcome to the weekly wrap-up. This is our new show where we showcase some highlights from the week that was, including some reminders, some replays, and some reflections from me, your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh. You may or may not recognize my voice from the Up Your Brave show, which airs live stream on Wednesdays 1 till 4 p.m. for your weekly dose of inspiration, motivation, and empowerment. More on that later in the show, but let's start off talking about what we're going to cover today. We're going to cover guest highlights from all of our shows, including audio clips from some of our hosts, to give you a little taste of some of the style of each show and some critical content from the week. I know we've had a ton of information come in, so we'll remind you when the lives are and also when the replays happen as well. Now, it's been an interesting week, generally, but for me on a personal level, I've been away at the New Earth NZ Festival, where I was doing a bit of MC work, I was doing a bit of presenting, but most of all, I was being present and grounded and connecting with absolutely amazing people, musicians, speakers, members of the public who are awake and aware and aligned and just so fascinated by this time we're living through. And then, of course, I came back home to Auckland, got straight back into business and parenting life. But I really do feel like there's a massive shift going on at the moment. And things are in a way, yes, I suppose they're heating up, but things are really transforming. And I feel like that is reflected to a certain extent by the two big announcements we've had in the past 2 weeks. Number one, last week with News Hub. And then this week, just recently with TVNZ, announcing that they are having some cuts to their staff, quite large cuts. So there'll be a lot of people upset by that. There'll be other people like me that feel like it's a sign of the times, that people are really seeking more true journalism and transparent information and not just being told what to think, you know, what flag to wave, who to believe in and who not to believe in. I think it's time that the people are kind of speaking and seeking more truth, which is why I love Reality Check Radio so much. So more on that, of course, later in the show. But first of all, a little bit of admin. Public service announcement. I know many of you have heard me say this before, but the COVID inquiry is happening at the moment. The feedback is due on the 24th of March. It's going to roll around real, real quick. So please check that out. Make a bookmark of the website, which is www.covidinquiry.co.nz. Inquiry with an I. So that website is going to be updated. So you just, with everything that you need to know, so that you can send your own personal experience, your own message through to the government all about the COVID inquiry. So I can't wait to take you through the weekly wrap up. But first, let's go to a song by an artist that I absolutely adore. I got to meet him in person at the NZ New Earth Festival, which was so exciting. I had the absolute pleasure of chatting with him and hearing a little bit of his music, of course, as well. You can see some of my photos and video from the festival, by the way, on the Up Your Brave Instagram page or Facebook as well. The artist coming up for you is Ricky Harawira, a true creative native who shines as one of Aotearoa's most remarkable artists. As the Best Māori Male Solo Artist nominee at the 2022 Waiata Māori Awards, he's the musical maverick with a passion for te reo Māori. He intertwines Waiata Māori with skillful lead guitar playing and seamlessly blends old school melodies with a modern twist. He creates captivating musical fusion, and his artistry is a testament to the power of cultural heritage and creative expression. I'm so excited to have him coming up as a guest on the Up Your Brave show in the future. But until then, let's have a listen to Ricky now. This is Ricky Hawarira with his song Greenstone and Gold.
Oh, 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 greenstone and gold. Rich in history, nuclear free. Bottom of the world is where we lie. Less than lying down under time. We got our own thing. We got no Wall Street jail, but here our moldy woman wail. We're supernatural. Bottom of the barrel and end of the line. But first to see the sunrise, we're leading up last in line. 'Cause we are blazing.
You're listening to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up, where we showcase highlights from the week that was and keep you up to date with the important stuff. A mix of reminders, replays, and some reflections with your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Weekly Wrap-Up on Reality Check Radio. I'm your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh, and I'm so excited for you to get a glimpse into what was covered by all of our amazing hosts this week. And as always, I'm secretly hoping that it will inspire you to check out some of the other shows that you haven't yet listened to. You can send us all of your feedback to inbox@realitycheck.radio. And you can also send in some topic suggestions if there's any issues or even any people that you'd love us to interview that you feel like we haven't heard from. We are always open to your feedback. So we value your feedback and we value your support. So please be sure to subscribe to the RCR email list, which you can do on the website and also on the app. And please go ahead and tell your friends about RCR to help us empower more people. A special note about a brand new feature that we have coming up for you today. The Fourth Estate is RCR's newest discussion panel where our host and guests talk all things media, very topical at the moment. So obviously there's so much going on in that space right now. You can tune in today at 4 p.m. right after the weekly wrap-up show. At 4 p.m. we've got today's hosts, Alistair Harding, with panelists Peter Williams, Judge David Harvey, and Emeritus Professor John Rain. I can't wait to hear this one. It will definitely be a goodie. All right, but before all that, let's kick things off with a recap of what happened on The Breakfast Show. I imagine many of you are regular listeners of The Breakfast Show, but if you missed it or just can't keep up, here's an overview of what was covered this week on The Breakfast Show with Paul Brennan. And reminder, by the way, it airs daily, every day, Monday through Friday, from 7 to 10 a.m. with repeat live streams Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 4. So this week, Paul's guests included real estate agent with more than 30 years experience, Janet Dixon, who spoke with Paul about the consequences of refusing to complete a course instructing real estate agents on Te Reo Māori and the Treaty of Waitangi. Also, NZ First leader, Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs, Winston Peters, was back on the show to talk to Paul, discussing the media, the COVID inquiry, money to the Ukraine, Hamas and gang patches. And we had also founder, author, and president at Brownstone Institute, Jeffrey Tucker, who dialed in to talk about his recent article, "The Failure of Science is Worse Than You Think." Then it was our man in France, Freddie Ponton. He was back to this time to tell us about France's new sectarian abuse law. We also catch up with another RCR host to talk about their show. Jerry Pives was on The Breakfast Show from Real People, and he's got an amazing show, so it's always good to hear what Jerry has to say. After that, Glenn Thomas, co-founder of the Gold Survival Guide, spoke to Paul about why the New Zealand Super Fund should invest in gold in 2024. I actually interviewed Glenn back in 2023, all about gold and silver. He's a great guy, so much wisdom. I definitely recommend you listen to his interview this week with Paul. Now, this week, we also aired Simon Anderson's report from Albert Park violence victim Judith Hobson, reacting to the news of her assailant discharge without conviction in the Auckland District Court yesterday. In fact, I tuned in this week to Cam Slater's show, and he was also reflecting on that as well. Pretty shocking, I have to say. What else? We also took a look at what was hot and happening in the travel sector when travel specialist Tim Malone returned to RCR, and women's rights campaigner Annie O'Brien joined Paul to discuss the Granny Basher case. RCR's inquiry session series continued with the Danish physician, medical researcher, and former leader of the Nordic Cochrane Center, Professor Peter Goschke, joined Alistair Harding to discuss the science of lab leaks, gain of function, lockdowns, and masks. That sounds like a really good one to send to some of your friends and family who may or may not be connecting the dots of what happened over the past 3 years. Then, beaming in from Hong Kong, author and co-founder of Architects for Social Housing, Simon Elmer, returned to RCR to tell us why we should destroy our smartphones now. I'm definitely going to go and listen to that replay. This week on Thursday, we got a sneak peek from some of Marie Buskey's interview with Judith Hobson, the 71-year-old woman who was bashed at the Posey Parker rally, whose 21-year-old assailant was discharged without conviction at the Auckland District Court on Monday. The full Judith Hobson interview will play on next Wednesday's Counterculture program, so you can listen to Marie talk about that. There was also a meet and chat with other RCR show host, Tobias Tahi, who joined Paul to talk about his Truth Speaker show, which plays Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays on RCR. Finally, Professor Michael Antoneau of King's College London joined Paul to discuss the myths and truths concerning GMOs and why deregulation is not the way forward. And there was also a bit of perspective on taxpayer-funded school lunches. All right. Well, that was most of what happened on The Breakfast Show. As you can tell, there is so much to keep up with. And on Friday, of course, it's always the political panel that you can catch as well in the morning. So I hope you enjoyed that. Now we're going to go next. We're going to go next to a clip from Paul's interview with Winston Peters. He's been on our show a number of times. As some of you might know, he was on the Parliament steps this week with Tanya Unkevich, receiving the information from NZDSOS. So we're going to hear a little bit about what Winston had to say on all sorts of topics.
You've been around a long time, don't need to remind you. But back in the day, I don't know, going back 20, 30 years, how different was it from your observation in terms of those media principles, journalistic principles that you've singled out recently that are totally lacking? Many of us would agree with that. What's the comparison like when you think back to those times, compare it with now?
Well, back then, particularly investigative journalism was given far more time and far more resources to do their job properly. And I progressively saw them being starved of this. I made a speech over 28 years ago saying that I could see something ominous shaping up in New Zealand. But, you know, people just think that you don't know what you're talking about and just ignore what you say. And I remember Morris Williamson was the one that actually enabled TV3 to keep going a long time ago. Everybody forgets that. And so, how shall I say it? It's disappointing to get to where we are now and just find that you've got one television broadcasting potential future, which is taxpayer-funded, up against those who were not, in the extent they may have been, to be fair.
What about, we found out this week that there'd been some collusion, let's say, amongst senior journalists, editors, seriously discussing not reporting you?
Well, you know, something, I was not surprised by that. There have been past times when they have met, and a long time ago, where the group agreement of the senior people was to treat me and my party as being risible. That was the word they used. It never worked then, but they were doing it sometimes back then. And they didn't in the last campaign as well. I mean, we had so many meetings where they never turned up. Now they're claiming that they did, but they didn't. I've got all the videos of all those meetings, and there wasn't one journalist there. So it didn't surprise me, but what astonished me in this context was not that they did it, but that they thought that the Public Interest Journalism Fund was about neutrality. Why don't they actually read the terms of the contract? Anybody that reads the terms of that contract, including the caveat, that if they didn't perform in the way that was requested of them in the contract, the money would be taken back off them, knows fully what I'm talking about. And I'm astounded that people at the very top of the media could stand there and barefaced claim it was otherwise, that black, in fact, is white.
They're not that dumb, are they?
Well, I thought myself, if you people are meeting, and I saw the editor to the listener have a go at me and others as well, and I thought, you must think that you're so clever and you're so esteemed and so above accountability that facts don't matter. Go back and read your contract. Well, didn't you read it the first time round? But I was there when we stopped it. They never got that contract until December 2020, a month after the 2020 election. That's my bona fides. What's theirs?
It seems in the aftermath of News Hub, because this is the big one that is happening right now, and it kind of follows on from what you're just saying there. There doesn't seem to be an appreciation amongst the people in the sector, let's say, about why they're in the situation they're in. It's like they don't kind of realize it. Is that what you pick up?
Well, that's the most disturbing feature, because I know too many serious journalists, experienced journalists, who know what I'm talking about. These people have gone on, and some of them have retired, but some of them are still involved in other sectors of the media, often privately funded, because of the state of things as they are. But the part that concerned me was, put aside that, you know, the Fourth Estate is not government, and it's not, how shall I say, a part and parcel of the governance of a administration of a country. It is the holding the administration to account that matters there, that they could be at that level and not understand their critical role and how they may have failed at it.
There was a hit piece on us and stuff just the last week, journalist Glenn McConnell, and he was insinuating that by, like, someone like you talking to us right now, that you're legitimizing extreme content because we are extreme.
Well, he's looking in the mirror. This is a lefty shill. This is somebody that came down to a meeting at Howick. It was wall to wall. I gave them a copy of my speech at the end of it, at the beginning of it, so they'd know what I was talking about. They had not one question to ask me about my speech. They came out to have a go at me about something else, and I thought, I'm not putting up with this. I've been around too long. This hall is packed out for a reason. We're making a comeback here, and you're staring it in the face, and you're so ignorant of your duty to report the rise and the increase of audience and support. It's called market share in politics, and you think you're going to get away with that? So I'm not concerned about his attack. Although he had the audacity to actually write it, and worse still, somebody actually published it.
Yeah, I mean, in one day, a week ago, had Margaret Mutu on, followed by David Seymour. I mean, how can you say that's extreme?
Well, you're doing what Phil Collins did when he sang this song called Both Sides of the Story. That's what a journalist's job is to do, is to purport the fact and let the public decide. But no, we've got all these hardly trained, barely out of journalism school editorial writers in these days, and they think that passes for news. It doesn't. That's why there's been a massive fall-off.
There is absolutely no financial advantage to anybody in the world for getting healthy, whereas it wasn't too long ago when your insurance premiums would go down, for example. You'd pay less than medical care. But if it doesn't make any difference, then your health becomes purely an abstraction to you. And instead becomes a kind of consumption good, right? So,
yeah.
So instead of you know, doing some burpees next to your bed in the morning, you know, instead you pay for an expensive gym membership that you never use, and then make sure to never miss your counseling sessions with your psychiatrist, so he can give you all your antidepressants and put you to sleep at night and wake you up in the morning and get your attention in the afternoon, so that you have on and off buttons for every mood you need, you know. And also we have drugs to make you good in bed, and then other drugs to, you know, to take that away and so on. So we have drugs to counteract the side effects of every other drug on an infinite basis, you know. And these are all consumer products, which plays very much into an ethos that's developed in Western industrialized democracies that promotes consumption and transactions, you know, above everything else. So, and this is a kind of, you know, embedded very much in our long-run capitalist ethos, which is fine when you're talking about, you know, the butcher, the baker, and the brewer.
Now we're talking about the pharmacy
yeah, when you're talking about the psychiatrists and the pharmaceuticals and the drug manufacturers that are holding patents and developing their potions with taxpayer money, and then being indemnified against any damages that they might cause. We really are talking about something not capitalistic, but rather fascistic, corporativist, and ultimately, as I say, colonialist. But the land grab is our own bodies.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Weekly Wrap-Up, and we are at this point talking about The Breakfast Show. Paul returns with some fantastic regular features, and this week some of the topics were: on Monday, the health hacks session with Dr. Glenn Davies on type 2 diabetes. On Tuesday, Tim Wilms from the unshackled.net from Melbourne called in with his weekly report from Australia, including a by-election win for Labor, police finding bodies in a bizarre double murder case, ASIO calls out the former politician for spying, and more. Stephen Sykes was back with another Tech Tuesday, answering feedback and talking about this week's tech news and issues. On Wednesday, our Legal Hub Wednesday feature with Katie Ashbin-Coppins took us through some of the week's legal cases and issues. On Thursday, it was Perigo's perspective with Lindsay pondering in the first domino has fallen on a foul and pestilent congression of communists. You must listen to Perigo's perspective. All right. And also, we all help you join more Money Dots with Farzan Irani, who returned to Money Talks. So today we've decided we're going to share a little bit of the Steve Sykes talk from Tech Tuesday as he discusses this funny but serious issue with the Roomba robot vacuum, followed by a short clip from Legal Hub, where you'll hear from Katie discussing her Australian court GMO court case. You can listen to the full replay and get all the details on the case. But here is a snippet. And first up, we've got Tech Tuesday and that naughty Roomba vacuum.
Roomba, you mentioned before.
Yes, that was a slip of the tongue. So,
what is a Roomba? I think I've heard the word before.
It's a robot vacuum cleaner. And so something really awkward happened. This was last year, I think it was, that an iRobot vacuum collected sensitive images of people who were testing it and shared it with third parties. So,
what do you mean test? Sorry, images. That sounds pretty well innocent. You know, like switch it on and watch it sort of zing around the room. That's how they got the name, a Roomba, right? That's the name.
Well, exactly. It's the other way around. It was watching the testers. So when a beta tester for iRobot's Roomba, this is on their J series vacuum cleaner,
yep.
It's an autonomous vacuum cleaner, told MIT Technology Review that the company's labeling contractors shared non-anonymized images of their participants on the toilet to public social media platforms without their knowledge or their consent.
But now, you know that Roomba was in the room with you, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you don't know that it's actually watching you on the toilet and,
so it's doing...
and then going to take images and phone home with them.
So what, I'm trying to imagine the scene. You're sitting there and this thing's sort of moving around your feet or something. Is that what it's...
Yep.
Vacuuming the little mat.
Yep.
And looking up.
She should say, maybe you could consider don't clean the toilet while someone's in there.
But there'd be other locations too, I would imagine.
Yes. The a response to the investigation on LinkedIn, the iRobot CEO Colin Angle blamed the third-party image annotation provider for the sensitive images leaking and announced that it would terminate its relationship with the company. But at least 11 participants deny that iRobot made it clear enough to them the privacy risks they were signing up for.
How does the robot can't do that, though? And I suppose if you're recruiting the testers, you'd need to informed consent, right?
Well, if informed consent says things like may take photos of you and phone home with them, then if the wording is as clear as that, then it would be like, well, hang on, that's a red flag.
So the normal product takes images, or does it need the imaging equipment to move around the room? Is that why it has it?
That's probably what it was using, but often these vacuum cleaners use laser scanners, so they can map out a room. So you can, I mean, some of them you can draw a map of your room, your lounge, for example, and then it works its way around and avoids obstacles as it senses them. And then there's other ones that scan the entire room, so you just plonk it down, hit the go button, and off it goes.
Wow. I've not had any experience of autonomous vacuum cleaners in the house. But they also make autonomous lawnmowers now too, don't they?
Yes. I've seen people a long time ago even make radio control ones. So they take an existing petrol lawnmower and add a radio control unit on it and sit back on the deck and instead of a radio control toy car, it's a lawnmower.
How lazy is that?
Oh, but it's fun though.
Yeah. Okay. What we'll see next is a hybrid mower vacuum cleaner. So, you know, turn it over.
It would be bad to have the lawnmower inside the house.
Yeah. If you had shag pile carpet though, you'd be all right.
I don't know. Well, depends on the height of the lawnmower.
So anyway, I can just imagine some embarrassing images from that, especially if the assumption was this isn't going to take pictures of me or.
Yes.
And obviously, this vacuuming in the loo, hey? It's like not the bloody vacuum cleaner trying to get in again.
We talked about this. Boundaries.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So let's be clear, just before we get off this onto the next thing, which can make my blood pressure go up even more. So let's be clear. The mRNA, that is genetic engineering. That is a GE product, right? That is a GMO product. Whatever you call it, there's no doubt about that, right? There's no doubt whatsoever about that. Everyone accepts that.
That's
but
correct.
Somehow that and that alone had a frictionless ride through all of that, despite its status as an actual GMO, genetically modified, engineered, whatever thing. And everything else needs a license, but not this one.
Correct. And AstraZeneca got a license, which is also similar technology, not the same technology. But, you know, it's gene therapy. Everyone was very proud to describe it and mention it as gene therapy. We've got the modified or the synthetic mRNA that is able to be transported into the lipid nanoparticle.
Yep, into the cell.
And then it goes into the cell. That is the definition of genetically modified.
Rewrites over, transcribes, as I believe, a piece of, or a section of DNA. So suddenly you become your own spike protein 3D printing machine. Am I right?
Yes, that's the mRNA it's doing. But then separately last year, I'm not sure if you've come across his work yet, a gentleman by the name of Kevin McKernan, who's actually a genomics expert with marijuana plants in the States, he ended up having some vials and unpacked them, I guess, the recipe, and found a huge amount of DNA contamination in the products. That DNA contamination shouldn't be there. That's from a second process or an alternative process that was adopted to upscale the products. So we're putting all this clear evidence on. Kevin McKernan's one of our experts. He's saying, look, I'm finding incredible amounts of DNA contamination in here. It shouldn't be in there. It should have been filtered out. It hasn't been in the vials that I've tested. We've got a problem. And no, the judges are not prepared to even consider that. And that is a huge disappointment for not just me, but I think for humanity and certainly my clients. So what can we do but continue?
And he's injected himself and thousands of people in his practice, and there was no informed consent there. But anyway, that's another story.
I hope you enjoyed those audio clips from The Breakfast Show. Be sure to check out the replays on the replay page. And next up, after this short break, we're talking all things Real Talk with Rodney Hyde.
Hi, Peter Williams here. Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email or hit the join email button on your RCR app. With your help, we can continue to stand up for free speech, for open debate and rational discussion, reaching new audiences and bringing important information free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Visit realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference.
You're listening to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up, where we showcase highlights from the week that was and keep you up to date with the important stuff. A mix of reminders, replays, and some reflections with your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Weekly Wrap-Up, our new show on RCR, where we give you some replays, reminders, and reflections on the week that was. That last track was Bic Runga with her song Listening for the Weather. Real Talk with Rodney airs Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., with replays live streamed at 7 p.m. on those days and 10 p.m. Saturdays. You can join Rodney for in-depth, long-form interviews and hard-hitting commentary on society, culture, and politics. So, what happened this week on Real Talk? First up, Rodney spoke with Sarah Beasley, who returned to RCR to speak about the power of forming lobby groups and how she has formed an NZ First hub for this. Then former National Party MP Simon O'Connor joined Rodney to reflect on his time representing the Tamaki electorate, my electorate actually, fundamental rights and freedoms, and Simon's journey of faith. On Thursday, children's author Amy Brooke was one of the first writers to have her books canceled in New Zealand, and Rodney found out the true story about what happened. In this week's Politics Explained session, Tane joined Rodney for the question, what financial claims can MPs make? And finally, professor of economics at Waikato University, John Gibson, joined Rodney to discuss his analysis of the excess death data for New Zealand. Today, we're going to hear what Rodney has to say about the demise of News Hub and I'm sure he won't be holding back.
I haven't seen anything about News Hub announcing its closure and the 300-odd souls who lose their jobs. I just wanted to reflect on it for a few days because, I don't know, it was a bit of, what's that German word, Schopenfraud or something. And I just wanted to get over the knee-jerk reaction that I might say. But there's been something odd about it, hasn't there? Like journalists having this overblown sense of their role. Oh, it's the death of democracy, you know, New Zealand society and all the rest of it, it's been lost. Well, we had a democracy long before there was TV. Long before there was TV3 and News Hub. Indeed, I think the government, the TV3 had to fight for years and years and spend a great deal of money to get a license even to broadcast. And there's talk that having TV3 and private TV would be the death of democracy. Democracy's been around a long time, News Hub not so much. But isn't that sort of their problem, that self-importance that they have about themselves, that they equate themselves with the public and what the public want to know, what the public are thinking, and that if they're not there, then democracy dies? When in actual fact, people had switched off them years ago. They were unaware of it. These journalists seemed unaware of the fact that people weren't watching or listening any longer. Never occurred to them to ask why. And they sort of, instead of finding out what the public wanted, they just went deeper inside themselves and became narrower and narrower. And you saw this, and I've watched it and read the transcript of Paula Penfold interviewing her ex-husband, Mike McRoberts. And it's peculiar, right? Because ex-wife interviewing her ex-husband, and it's all about how you're feeling and how is it, and it's so tough, and like everyone's lost their jobs. Most people have been through this. And we didn't say it was the end of democracy. Yes, it was tough, but people get through it. And then they say, oh, we just love telling stories. And that's really stuck in my mind, this idea that these journalists are telling stories. Yeah, fairy stories. But I never, when I did, used to flick on the TV or listen to the radio, unless it was story time or story hour, I wasn't flicking on to get stories. I was wanting the news. What was happening around New Zealand? What was happening around the world? Not stories. But nowadays they say they're only telling us stories. It's a peculiar way of thinking about news, and not a very interesting way. But here's the thing. They long ago gave up telling us stories about us, that is to say the people of New Zealand. They were telling us their stories, what they wanted to tell us about. Where was Paula Penfold and Mike McRoberts in telling the stories about us, who didn't support the lockdowns or who suffered terribly through the lockdowns or who had our businesses shut down through the lockdowns? Where was our story being told? Where was our story being told of those amongst us who had to face getting a jab that we didn't want, or losing our job, and our house. Where was their story? Where was the story being told of people that travelled in their thousands from one end of New Zealand to the other to protest at Parliament? To have water rain down on us, abuse hurled at us, and ultimately the police attack us. And all the while, to be demonised through our House of Representatives, most famously as a river of filth, and to be demonised by the news media, especially News Hub, and in particular Paula Penfold, through her so-called documentary, Fire and Fury, where those of us who protested were very badly treated and ridiculed and made fun of. Or not so much made fun of, but made to be dark and sinister. Where was our story being told? It was just a complete setup. So the idea that Mike McRoberts and Paula Penfold and News Hub and TV3 were telling our stories is bunk. They didn't tell our story ever. And let's really get to the heart of it. Where was the story being told of those amongst us who took the jab and were injured? Where was that story? Where was that follow-up? Where was that covered? Or of the deaths and the families left behind, bereaved? Where was that story? So they were never telling our stories. They had disappeared into their little bubble. So much so that it's sort of like, oh, we're no longer here. Well, you're losing over 30 million a year. Where do they think that money was going to keep coming from? Once Jacinda was gone, the tap was turned off. I think that looking at these journalists interviewing each other and telling their story of how News Hub closed, how completely in a bubble they have become. Because I watched successful businesses close. Not because they weren't making money, they were. Not because they weren't supplying what their customers wanted, they were. But they were shut down and closed because of the lockdowns and the aftermath. Totally heartless and uncaring. Where was that story, News Hub? No, News Hub, you stopped telling our stories years and decades ago. You stopped being a boon to democracy. And you were propagandists for Jacinda Ardern and the Labour-led government. It was a shocking display. And so I'm sorry, we stopped watching. And when we stopped watching, people stopped advertising. We can get our news elsewhere. And so you showed us when you're telling about telling stories, and that's what you like doing, well, you can still tell your stories, and I wish you every bit of good luck. And I hope you find it in yourselves to reflect and to wonder, and to wonder about those people that, as Mike Roberts said to his ex-wife Paula, of what you tear people apart in interviews. I wonder if you reflect on those that you tore apart and those that you belittled and those that you didn't listen to now that News Hub is gone. I hope you will. And maybe you could even reach out. Paul and Mike, happy to interview you on Rattly Chick Radio, and we'll tell us your story and we'll tell you ours, because that would be something, would it not?
I always appreciate Rodney's insights and his honesty as well. And he was pretty spot on with what he said. But we'd love to know what your experience was, if you listen to that as well. And of course, Rodney will have more to say now that TVNZ have made similar announcements. What I'm wondering are, where were the stories of our experiences? I do feel that News Hub and many other legacy media ignored how destructive COVID became, for me particularly in the relationship department, but for so many others, fellow business owners that I know, and how a lot of these issues really just got swept under the carpet and people seem to move on. I personally feel that News Hub were instrumental in their own demise to a certain extent. I do hope that Paula Penfold takes Rodney up on his invitation and comes to RCR for an honest and frank discussion. Rodney is waiting for you, Paula, if you're out there and listening. Maybe someone can give her a nudge to come along. Be sure to catch the full replay of The Real Talk on the replay page. By the way, you can go to the app, the RCR app, if you haven't got it. Come on, even my 80-year-old dad has the app. Go ahead and get the free RCR app, or you can always go to realitycheck.radio and then click replays. And from there, you simply click on the show that you want to find the replay of.
You're listening to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up, where we showcase highlights from the week that was and keep you up to date with the important stuff. A mix of reminders, replays, and some reflections with your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
Welcome back to the Weekly Wrap-Up. Every Thursday morning, we welcome the one and only Lindsay Perigo to RCR's breakfast program. You can tune in around 8 a.m. on Thursdays to hear Lindsay deliver his gloriously eloquent, insightful, intelligent, and often cutting perspectives on current events, all finished off with some musical delight. And this week, as always, Lindsay does not disappoint. Be sure, he knows how to dish out and serve and express his perspective with wit. Have a listen here.
Andiamo. It's always edifying and gratifying, dear listeners, to get your feedback, especially since most of it tells me how you find it edifying and gratifying to have me here. I can only say, you're very welcome. It's an honour to be part of the real resistance, the counter-revolution, the antidote to woke fascism, the fulfilment of that most edifying and gratifying banner flown across our skies in anticipation of RCR, RIP Woke Media. How delicious to see that come to pass. May News Dump be just the first domino to fall in that foul and pestilent congregation of communists. May one nitwit News, the New Zealand Herald, National Socialist Radio, and stuff quickly collapse also. May academia, the very hub of evil, be next. These people have hectored, lectured, gaslit, and defrauded us, these smug, sanctimonious government propagandists, for long enough. If there's an appetite for their version of Pravda, let them put it out there in the open marketplace on their own dime. And may a thousand flowers bloom and weeds die. In any event, amongst the feedback on Feces' book last week was this, occasioned, I assume, by my reference to Britannistan and the fact that such formerly quintessentially British TV programs as Midsummer Murders now appear to have relocated to Eritrea. I don't know how, but we need to be doing more to stop these so-called refugees from coming to our countries. The globalists are moving quicker than we realize. If we don't move, we will be lost. That was one post, to which someone replied, I totally agree with you. Unfortunately, libertarians like Perigo and ACT don't have any objection to mass immigration. Well, I cannot speak for ACT, though I do know some of them are globalists, shills for Soros and the World Economic Forum, who do indeed actively approve of mass immigration. I can speak for myself. I believe in the right of every person to live his life as he sees fit, constrained only by the obvious corollary that he must respect the right of all others to do the same. That's what Ayn Rand called the non-initiation of force principle, often called the non-aggression principle. Quote, "No man may initiate the use of physical force against others. No man or group or society or government has the right to assume the role of a criminal and initiate the use of physical compulsion against any man. Men have the right to use physical force only in retaliation and only against those who initiate its use." Unquote. As someone who believes in that principle, in a world where billions do not, I am vehemently opposed to mass immigration. I believe governments charged with protecting their citizens from force initiators must be meticulous in vetting those who wish to enter their countries. At minimum, of course, known criminals must be kept out. So too must those of force-initiating ideologies who believe that only they are righteous and right, and that they have the right, nay, the duty, to force their views on everyone else. Here it must be assumed that adherents to such a view are sincere and will act on it. The default position must therefore be to keep them out. In our current context, that means no Marxists and no Islamists, at minimum. Currently, by contrast, Beijing Biden, the bribed bastard, has opened America to mass illegal immigration. That is one of the things he was bribed to do. The invasion by 10 million third worlders, including Marxists, Islamists, and criminals, since Biden's inauguration is not the result of incompetence, mismanagement, or senility. It is deliberate. Now we learn that an additional 300,000 have been secretly flown in by Biden in the last 12 months. Without disclosing who was bribing him, Biden told us what he would do, and he's been devastatingly competent in doing it.
I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
This is no mere surge, of course. It is an invasion, more consequential than an open war. No conventional warfare would enable one side to infiltrate the other with 10 million soldiers. How is this working out? Who knows what fresh terror the Islamists are plotting in their zeal for death to America? We'll all know soon enough. China's Marxist triads have joined the criminal cartels in facilitating the flow of fentanyl, killing 300 Americans a day, along with facilitating slavery, including the sexual enslavement of children. 20,000 military-age single males from communist China have crossed the border since October. It's doubtful that they're there to pick Nancy Pelosi's grapes. Random criminals have been running amok, looting, raping, and killing. The murder of 22-year-old nursing student Laken Riley while out on a jog in Athens, Georgia, by an illegal immigrant from socialist shithole Venezuela, who had already been arrested for multiple felonies multiple times and not deported. has finally awakened complacent Americans into long overdue outrage. Dem scum, who hate America and love the invasion, have been beside themselves in their haste to downplay the grisly murder which left Lakin's skull shattered. The Dem scum woke fascist mayor of Athens, Kelly Gertz, who has turned Athens into the equivalent of a sanctuary city by stealth, tried to blame Trump. I'll let Jesse Waters pick up the story, but the first voice you'll hear here is that of the mayor, who, like Biden, is among the lowest forms of life. The audience outrage is edifying and gratifying.
This term sanctuary city doesn't have a sole legal or procedural definition. Many of the elements...
Liar! Be time for liar. Questions. You are guilty and got blood on your hands for this murder, sir.
And no policies have been adopted Please by the mayor lying. And commission You're that have created sanctuary city status in
sir.
Athens.
You need to resign.
One protocol
resign
that sometimes
now.
Arises...
You allow
One protocol.
This to happen. You're fired.
We said
You're fired. You need to go, sir. We don't want to hear from you no more. You're not defending us. You're not upholding your oath of office, sir. You are lawless. You are a criminal. We created this government, and we pay your salary. You do what we want you to do, not what you want to do.
Americans are sick and tired of being lied to by pathetic politicians who think we can't read the laws they write behind our backs. We investigated Georgia law. The state prohibits sanctuary cities. But these wicked little mayors, like this guy, while everyone's distracted, create loopholes to prevent their towns from working with ICE, so they can brag about how kind and compassionate they are towards migrants. And then when Americans are murdered by migrants, these fringe libs lie and cover their hides and claim, oh, we're not a sanctuary city, even though they bragged about it 5 years ago. Watch.
And whereas white nationalists and xenophobes have been emboldened by some politicians and members of the media, and we recognize that our entire community, not just people of color and immigrants, is harmed by the existence of white supremacy in our community going unchallenged. And whereas our immigrant and undocumented neighbors, especially those of Latinx heritage, face daily fears and threats from individuals and institutions such as ICE, and whereas for the Athens community to be whole, it is necessary that families and loved ones remain together and that all people, including those without documentation, feel welcome and comfortable.
You see, Kelly welcomed illegals, shut out ICE, now an American girl's dead. It wasn't white supremacy that killed her, it was white guilt. And we don't care what color migrants are, America's the land of immigrants, but protecting criminal illegals from deportation doesn't make you look like you have a big heart, makes you look like you have a small brain. And anybody who uses the phrase Latinx is a joke. This guy Kelly, who just said it's not a sanctuary city, then says we had to make it a sanctuary city to protect migrants from Trump.
While 2019 was not that long ago, you might remember the dynamic we were living in the late teens in this country, where you had the President of the United States speaking in the most vile terms about people who were foreign born. And you had that notion metastasizing in places like Charlottesville.
This is an invasion!
That's how to deal with woke fascist oleaginites. Don't let them get away with their slimy spin. Did you know, by the way, that part of that spin now is to call illegal aliens not undocumented immigrants, which was a bad enough euphemism, but newcomers? I guess the illegal alien who bashed in Lakin Riley's skull was a newcomer acting inappropriately. My immigration plan is very simple. None. Except for those avowedly and provably committed to the non-initiation of force principle. Aside from that, no immigration at all. Lots of emigration, though. I would include a voluntary self-deportation plan whereby advocates of mass immigration would be entitled to a one-way ticket on the taxpayer dime to a shithole of their choice, with whose unfortunate inhabitants they would love to flood our country. Iran, say, or Venezuela, or North Korea, or Communist China, or Somalia, or Yemen, or, Eritrea. A sanctuary for all the laid-off Pravda propagandists. A communist dictatorship, or Islamic theocracy, woke fascist nirvana. Don't know how they'll get on with their pronouns, though. As for genuine refugees, well, Rachmaninoff fled Russia when it became a communist dictatorship. That's my kind of refugee. He'd be head of the queue under my system. The skill set, too. Real nirvana.
Wow, the first domino has fallen on a foul and pestilent congregation of communists. Oh my goodness, classic Lindsay. If you're a first-time listener of Lindsay's, you may have found it fantastical or full-on, or maybe you're a longtime fan. Either way, we would love to know what you thought. You can be sure to let us know on text, 2057 on the text, or email inbox@realitycheck.radio. The beautiful music that Lindsay played at the end of his clip was called Frankfurt Radio Symphony Live by Alexander Malofiev and Elaine Antinglu, Rachmaninoff, and Shostakovich. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more from the week that was on RCR Reality Check Radio. Next up, it's all about The Crunch. The Crunch with Cam Slater airs on Thursday afternoons from 4 till 7 p.m., with replays live streamed on Fridays, 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 10 a.m. The Crunch is RCR's show dedicated to all things politics. Each week, Cam interviews political figures and commentators in what is always a thoroughly informative and entertaining listening experience. If you haven't tuned into The Crunch, I highly, highly recommend. This week on The Crunch, We had historian Professor Paul Mu, who returned to RCR with Cam to discuss his article, Waitangi Day 2024, Five Myths and Misconceptions That Confuse the Treaty Debate. Also, politician historian Dr. Michael Bassett joined Cam to reflect on the previous government and share his thoughts on the new government's challenges. Cam then asked his buddies what they thought of the collapse of News Hub and the general media landscape. So, reminder, you can catch the full replay to hear the end of that buddy segment, which are the buddy segment we're about to play. You can get the replays on the website and also on the app. Here you go. If you haven't listened before, here's a little clip from Cam's buddies.
Do you know what I think is the most shocking thing of all?
That they've got their hand out for government money?
They are shocked. It's just unbelievable.
And it's ridiculous.
I mean, honestly, I can't believe that their overflated egos actually think that they have an amazing product. It's an awful product. And I used to watch it years ago, and I can no longer watch it. I turn it off. So I'm just an ordinary person, you know, that represents the average Joe Bloggs, really. Other people turn it off too. And, you know, the absolute inane hilarity and kindergarten style of delivery is beyond belief. Do they think that's viewable? It's like story time for children. Well, is it just me that thinks that?
No, I don't think it's just you that thinks that. And I think in increasing numbers, people have been turned off, both TVNZ and News Hub, for receiving their news. I mean, often stories that they run are 4 or 5 days old. Then they put a particular slant on it and you think, well, hang on a second. I read that, you know, somewhere else around the world 4 or 5 days ago, and that's not the impression I got from that story. And they've been pushing these agendas of various minor groups of people in New Zealand as though it's normal, you know, and it's not.
I know. And I've got a beauty on that one. That this was actually the point that turned me around on the media, and they won't like to know that it involved Donald Trump. They won't like that. But I happened to be watching Fox, and Trump came on, and as he often did, he whistled up to the journalists and had a chat straight off the cuff. And this is what he said. To some people, COVID is just a cold. To others, it is life-threatening. Now, the very next day, all over our news, in fact, all over the world news, it said, Trump says COVID is just a cold.
Yeah.
Now, that is not what he said. It is totally misrepresenting what he said. And it was accompanied with a photo of Trump looking as ridiculous as is possible. And this is how they shape our minds. So just from that one item, they persuade people to think Trump's an idiot, COVID is very serious, ooh, fear, and we must watch the next episode because it's like a soap opera. Well, they're just liars. They're just liars through and through. And they have a format, which I'm sure you're aware of. So we sort of have the newsreader's headline, which captures our attention. And then we have a journalist lead-in, don't we, which sets our emotion for what's to follow.
Yeah.
And then we have the video, which shows the evidence. And that's often staged. And then the journalist closes, usually in a fairly fatalistic tone, and we suck up the whole item as fact. Well, the bad news for them is a lot of people have woken up to that now.
You're listening to the Weekly Wrap-Up, and I'm slowly walking you through the week that was. We're up to Wednesday now, and on Wednesday, it's the Women's Day. We've got Marie Buskey followed by my show, Up Your Brave. I love listening to Marie's show. She is so well-researched. She's so fun to listen to and also very on point as she hosts her counterculture show, which airs on Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with live stream replays 7 p.m. Wednesdays and 10 a.m. Saturdays. This show looks at critical social justice, colloquially known as woke ideology, and how it applies in an everyday context. If you haven't listened to Marie's amazing Kiwi Farm that she does every week, it is most entertaining. This week on Counterculture, Marie welcomed back Jody Brunning, who wore her physician and scientist for global responsibility hat to discuss her recent review of three incredible books on mental health and how our diets can affect mood and acuity. I totally agree. I think the diet, the impact of the diet is so underrelated when it comes to mental health and health in general. Also, Tony Pitt was on the show, researcher and co-author of a comprehensive report released by Family First titled, Is It Working? A Comprehensive Look at the Decriminalization of Prostitution 20 Years On. Tony joined Marie to discuss what he has been seeing. Marty Gibson and Marie chatted also in Media Matters. So first up, we're going to share with you a little clip from our very popular story segment, Kiwi Farm, formerly known as Aotearoa Farm. This is a modern-day online radio serial that Marie shares with her listeners weekly with installments of the dramatic happenings on Kiwi Farm. I highly recommend you check out the previous episodes. After that, we will hear some shocking health statistics from public health specialist Jody Brunning and her interview, which is a must-hear this week.
Welcome to Kiwi Farm, established 1840. There was a sense of unease among the sheep paddocks on Kiwi Farm. The value of the sheep to the farm had always been their ability to spread the news from farmyard to the pastures as quickly as possible. Not always accurately, but their skill was deployed and often exploited by Napoleon, Chippy and Squealer, one way or t'other for the prevailing years. The wool on the back of the sheep lost its value years ago, and it was only the meat on their bones which saw any other tangible benefit to Kiwi Farm. As a way to afford to keep such vast flocks of sheep on the farm, many of the sheep paddocks had been leased to other farms. The home paddock and Pasture 1 remained in control of the farmhouse, but other paddocks, like Pasture 3, were leased to Uncle Sam's farm. When this deal was struck, the sheep inhabiting Pasture 3 were excited at the prospect of more feed and greater opportunities. They worked hard to emphasise what they believed were the wants and needs of their masters, not only in the Kiwi farmhouse, but Uncle Sam's as well. The flaw in this plan was that the sheep had lost touch with what was happening from the rolling hills to the rustic fences of Kiwi Farm. The animals had grown weary of the sheep's continuous bleating and berating to the point that most animals simply ignored anything that fell from their mouths, choosing to listen to a great number of other animals, especially those who the sheep despised. A group of such animals lived in a meadow a little way out from the farmhouse, up on a knoll, just high enough for them to see what was happening. Many animals now deferred to this diverse bunch for their news and opinions, and their move closer to town was facilitated in part by Winnie Benn. Baza and Sheila, two hard-working farm dogs, knew plenty about herding and tolerating the vagrancies of the sheep. They preferred this wee meadow up on the knoll and retreated to it as often as they could when they weren't working.
Hey, Baza, take a look at what just arrived at the farm, exclaimed Sheila. Blow me down, Sheila. Is that a sheep truck? I can't quite read the name on the side, said Baza.
Out of the truck stepped a coyote in shiny boots and a large cowboy hat, fresh from Uncle Sam's farm. He was here to see the sheep in his employ. The sheep of the Pasture 3 gathered round and looked up wide-eyed at their bold benefactor. What news did he have to share? More feed? Larger pastures, perhaps? As Baza and Sheila watched on at the meeting unfolding down the hill from them, they too wondered what was going on. After a time, the sheep were then ushered into single file and then loaded onto the truck, looking a little bewildered at what was taking place, uncertain of their fate, many still bleating.
Winky Lux takes extra feed for his sty. Winnie Ben worries on sheep he should not be trusted.
The truck starts up and starts to drive away. As it turned and headed down the gravel driveway of Kiwi Farm, it was then that Bazza saw the logo on the side of the truck as it glinted in the late autumn sunshine. Silver Fern Farms. Bazza turned to Sheila.
Oh, looks like the days of the sheep of Pasture 3 being mutton dressed up as lamb are over. That's a one-way trip, Sheila. That truck's off to the works.
So we have a fifth of the world's children, and of course I'm getting this data from these books, a fifth of the world's children and adolescents have a mental health disorder. Roughly, the 27 WHO data said it's roughly 13% of the world population, anxiety leading it at 3.4%. In the US, about half of all people will meet the criteria for mental disorder at some stage. So this, and this is growing, this is a growing problem. And there's associations too, of course. So if you have severe burnout, you're 46 times more likely to meet the criteria for major depression, and burnout is associated with suicide. Autism in the US in 2000 was 1 in 150, and in 2014 it was 1 in 59. If we look at bipolar disorder in the mid-70s to year 2000, it was between 0.4 to 1.6 of the population, but by the early 2000s it was 4 to 7% of the population. It was rare in children, but not so much now. And, it, you know, in the US, and I suspect New Zealand, mental health and substance use disorders are leading to years lost to disability. You know, this, they are contributing to the overall disease burden. In prisons, the homeless, at least 50% will be diagnosed with mental illness or substance abuse. And it, this is what's a really important factor that comes out in these books, is that about half of people diagnosed with any mental disorder will have more than one. So this is not, this is multifactorial. So 10% of people diagnosed with major depression will have psychotic symptoms. Depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and schizoaffective disorder, all these guys are twice as likely to have an anxiety diagnosis. And then we look at the metabolic association. So 81% of people with Alzheimer's disease have insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes. 70% of people with autism have at least one other mental disorder, and 50% have two or more. I'm going through a wide range here because it is, then different people can, it can really focus on what's happening in their own homes. I think that's really quite important. And people with autism, they have a higher rate risk for everything from substance use to mood to eating and to behavioural disorders. And as these scientists show us, there's a bi-directional relationship of eating disorders and all other mental disorders. And Palmer, Chris Palmer in Brain Energy focuses on this a lot. 56% of people with anorexia, 79% of people with binge eating disorder, and 95% of people with bulimia will have at least one other mental disorder. For each and every risk factor, there's an increased risk for other disorders.
Yeah, and I can totally see how that comes. Like, I mean, obviously I've got a son who's got autism, and I remember when he got his diagnosis, the one thing we were told is it inevitably always comes with friends, is what the neuropediatrician said. You know, she said it always comes with other things. And you're, you know, it's so fascinating because when you've got the difficulty, like when you find these things out and you do a deep dive and you're like, how do I fix this? Diet is certainly something that makes a massive difference. So I know for us, with him, even as a baby, you know, like he and toddler, if he wasn't eating at certain times, his behavior would go sort of pear-shaped. And then once we had the diagnosis, and of course autism, people with autism have a tendency to be exceptionally fussy about their food, you then struggle because the foods that they will eat don't fit, you know, not necessarily the best for their brains, and all of those sorts of challenges. And here's the amazing thing is, as he grew older, because he has sensory processing, so the smell and the texture and all those heightened experiences with food, once he actually, it was almost like a little switch had flipped in his head and he moved past not having, only eating foods that were white and yellow, and none of them could touch on the plate. And we never ate more than five different things at any given time. To now, a child who was in Culinary Institute, who loves to cook, he has a very wide-ranging and eclectic flavour palette, but the quality of the food he's eating is so much better because he's invested in it. And to that end, his autism is fully under control. Most people, if you were to meet him, you would never even know he was on the spectrum. So what are some of the key offenders in this? What are some of the things, that little traps that we fall into that we may not realise are sort of affecting our health detrimentally?
So it's pretty much all circles around ultra-processed food and the extent of ultra-processed food. So ultra-processed food, and there's a NOVA, N-O-V-A classification people can look at. And that is food that has lots of numbers in it that you don't know. Right. So if we look at tin pineapples, they're not ultra-processed food. If we look at frozen carrots, they're not ultra-processed food. But if you look at sauces with lots of sweets and lots of numbers, they're ultra-processed. If you look at pouches that little babies are sucking with maltodextrin and thickeners and numbers in it, they're ultra-processed. If we look at crackers that we feed kids because we think they're hungry, they're ultra-processed. So 40% of Australian purchases are ultra-processed, 50% in the UK are ultra-processed, and 60% in the US are ultra-processed. I talk a lot about how stuffed up our science system is because it's been directed in a profoundly corrupted way. So we have too few studies looking at this to help just build population-level knowledge and also to inform the bureaucracies. So there's a paper that was a 2021 paper by Fangupo et al. It's ultra-processed food intake. And they looked at, you know, nearly 700 kids born between 2009 and 2010. I think it's part of the Dunedin study. The ultra-processed food, you know, component of their diet. So remember, this is 14 years ago, was at 12 months was 45%. This is the mean. At 24 months, it was 42%. Oh. And at 60 months, it's 51% of the energy intake of these children. We're used to the concept that, oh, my goodness, it's too hard. It's actually, you know, here's the simplest example. I was living in France. There was a house fire. We were invited to the neighbours. They're French farmers. The kitchen is not a glamorous French kitchen. It is like your average super poor, super simple, the simplest kitchen you ever see in New Zealand. And she cooked us for dinner meat and greens. It was a last minute, they just cooked what they had, and all it was on the plate was meat and greens. And I looked at it and I just went, oh my God, that's how they always eat. You know, that's fast food. They cook the meat and greens. So minced patties, meat patties, you know, broccoli or, you know, or leafy greens, or if you just cook those two things for dinner, you're gonna satisfy most of your nutritional requirements. But that's not normal in New Zealand today.
With live music, interviews, and speaking the truth from his mind to yours, The Truth Speaker Show with Tobias Tahi brings music back to the true essence of what music should and will be, the voice of the people. You know, I was driving last weekend up to the New Earth NZ Festival, and it's about a four-hour drive for me. And on the way, I actually tuned in and listened to, must have been some of the replays, it was actually the live stream of the Tobias Tahi show. That's right. It would have been on, I think it was Thursday last week. I was driving up there and it was amazing to keep me alert and focused and informed. And of course his music, which is really like no other. You got to tune in. You can listen to Tobias on Mondays and Thursdays from 1 till 4 and catch the replays on air 10 p.m. Mondays, Thursdays, 4 p.m. on Saturday and 10 p.m. Sunday. So lots of opportunity. And definitely, I highly recommend tuning in to one of the live streams because due to copyright restrictions, we're actually not able to have the full music show on our website replays. So you got to catch it in real time. Now we're going to go to a short break with a quick message from Peter Williams, who's got a reminder for us.
Here at Reality Check Radio, we're on a mission to revive honest media. It's a good mission, and now you can be an integral part of it by joining the RCR Foundation Members Club. You'll receive exclusive benefits, including discounted merch, your backstage pass to join hosts for interactive behind-the-scenes discussions, and the popular daily curated news summary, RCR Bites, delivered to your email inbox every weekday morning, keeping you on the pulse of the news that matters in just a few minutes per day. To find out more, check www.realitycheck.radio/members. That's realitycheck.radio/members.
You're listening to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up, where we showcase highlights from the week that was and keep you up to date with the important stuff. A mix of reminders, replays, and some reflections with your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
Next up, we are talking all things eco. We're talking about Greenwashed. Greenwashed airs Monday at 10 a.m. with live stream replays, 7 p.m. Mondays and 7 a.m. Saturdays. Greenwashed takes a deep dive into the green agendas and chews the fat with a range of guests on issues such as sustainability, climate, emissions, and more. Don Nicholson co-hosts with Jaspreet Boparai, and together they ask the hard questions, like where are we heading and at what cost? Who controls the science? And who are the experts? Don and Jaspreet, if you haven't tuned in, they are such an amazing duo with so much depth, so much experience between them. I highly recommend you tune in. Here's what they covered this week. They spoke with farmers Bernadette Hunt and Jason Herrick, who shared their experience of the COVID regime and why you must help inform the rules for the pending inquiry by 24th of March. So there you go. There is your reminder to just do a little contribution, share your own personal experience in the COVID inquiry. You have to do that before March 24th. You don't have to, but if you choose to. One Nation federal campaign director, Craig Kelly, returned to RCR with his uncensored voice on climate to COVID to communism. Their new segment, Climate Crazy News, focused on topics ranging from climate subsidies in Australia to India's staple foods destroying biodiversity, the hottest February, and more. And their spotlight on NGOs looked at the UC Foundation, He Pua Waitanga, Future Generations, Sustainability and Civic Imagination. What does it do? So today what we've chosen is a little clip to share with you. We're going to dive into the climate crazy news of the week in this little clip that we will be sure to raise an eyebrow or two.
What else have you got? What else?
News Hub. News Hub.
Oh,
good old
dear.
News Hub.
Yeah, they've been in the news a bit in recent days, haven't they? Or is it News Hub or Newsroom? News Hub. Okay.
Yeah. So February, likely, the warmest on record amid climate change, states their headline over the weekend. Oh. February, likely, being the keyword warmest on record amid climate change. And then the first paragraph goes on to say, while data has not been finalized, three scientists told Reuters February is on track to have the highest global average temperature ever recorded. Three scientists, Don. Three entire scientists.
Yeah, there's only four in the world, so that's three.
That's only 5% consensus right there.
We've got to get to 97. Oh, God.
Three in a bit.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Out of four.
This hits the headlines. Three scientists.
Yeah. I mean, Karen Gleason, an atmospheric scientist at NOAA, NOAA, she says, I was in the eastern part of North Carolina yesterday and I saw some trees in full bloom with blossoms all over. And I'm thinking February. Actually, it's nearly end of February, lady, when this article went to press a couple of days ago.
It's springtime.
Isn't that spring in the Northern Hemisphere?
Of course, you'd expect blossoms to be sort of coming out by now, I imagine, in the Northern Hemisphere. But maybe it's different up there.
My dad has sent me pictures of his garden in full bloom. His flowers are his pride and joy, but he doesn't seem to have struck any alarm bells. I just keep getting more and more. He tries to get me to have some green fingers and thumbs, which I don't. But my dad's not alarmed, but scientists are.
Yeah, they are seriously alarmed, seriously concerned. I mean, we talk in my region occasionally you get a daffodil that comes out pre-winter. And you think, how the dickens did that happen? As the seasons jumped by sort of 3 or 4 months, but they don't last long. You get the first frost, and boom, they're gone. So it's interesting. This is vintage fear porn by News Hub and these scientists.
Yeah, and the video that went along with it of ice caps and whatnot, and children marching somewhere, and all of this, it is.
Oh, it even goes.
Perpetual noise.
Oh, it is. And heat is a substantial killer, they say. this person from University of California, Irvine. And we know that cold is the real killer. Cold takes out more people than the heat will ever do.
I listened to the news from the Northern Hemisphere with parents in India, and it seems this year they are being told the high number of heart attacks in India are due to the cold. So I was told cold is a bigger killer, but who is to say what is true? Look, the science evolves. I don't.
Yeah, and of course, the big issue for everyone is to start thinking about is, it's a bit like sea level rise and temperature. Thinking local just sums it up for most of us. We can see what's going on within seasons and within decades. We do know. We're not stupid. Just one other thing, while you were talking about crazy stuff this week, what's that about the CO2 running out in the supermarket shelves? It seems a bit like MSM or perhaps News Hub TV3 in New Zealand. They ran out of fizz last week. I think they ran out of CO2.
This is from ABC News, abc.net.au. Supermarket shelf depleted of soda water and soft drink amid low supply of CO2. Ooh. I know somewhere you can get CO2 very easily.
That's right. And in fact, if you want it highly concentrated, get the stuff coming out of a submarine. That will give you a lot. Wasn't that an interesting article to find that how they, because listeners, you may not know that an average room full of people would have perhaps 8 or 10,000 ppm sometimes of carbon dioxide, and submarines can get up to 40,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide, and that is seriously dangerous levels. So they actually moderate it back down to 6,000 to 8,000 parts per million, and we're at 420 in the world today or thereabouts. So everyone that's salivating or worried about CO2 being over 420 in the world's going to come to an end. The submariners do okay. They do okay.
Yep. At concentrations 100 times higher.
So
400 parts per million or 40,000 parts per million in a sub.
So we could bottle her up down there and give it to these supermarkets to pump into their fizzy drinks.
We totally could. There's an idea. If we get really desperate, because God knows New Zealand won't survive too long without beer, or even the Aussies, would they?
I don't think so. And I wouldn't either. So, a bit of CO2 is a good thing for me. I hope to be exhaling CO2 for some years yet. Thank you very much.
I hope so too as well, Don. We need you.
Someone reminded me the other day that New Zealand used to make their own CO2 as a byproduct. At the now closed Marsden Point oil refinery, the CO2 was then sold on to our beverage industry, I believe. And I wonder if those that closed the refinery are now beginning to see what they have done. If you enjoyed that short segment from Greenwash, you can catch the full replay on our website or app, or the full replay live stream, which airs tomorrow, Saturday morning, if you're getting up bright and early, 7 a.m. Real People in the Psychotherapist Chair airs on Tuesdays from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. with replay live stream at 10 p.m. that night, and also on Sundays at 4 p.m. Jerry Pives is your host, and he invites New Zealanders from all walks of life into the Psychotherapist Chair to talk about their lives, what it is that gets them out of bed in the morning, who has influenced them the most, how they deal with those stressful or traumatic moments in their lives. Jerry takes us every week on a journey of music that has influenced their lives. This week, former national MP and New Zealander Alfred Nero talked with Jerry about his story as New Zealand's first generation Pacifica MP, his family's history, culture, and traumas, and whether there's a place for prayer and spirituality in New Zealand politics.
Here at Reality Check Radio, we're on a mission to revive honest media. It's a good mission, and now you can be an integral part of it by joining the RCR Foundation Members Club. You'll receive exclusive benefits, including discounted merch, your backstage pass to join hosts for interactive behind-the-scenes discussions, and the popular daily curated news summary, RCR Bites, delivered to your email inbox every weekday morning, keeping you on the pulse of the news that matters in just a few minutes per day. To find out more, check www.realitycheck.radio/members. That's realitycheck.radio/members.
You're listening to the Weekly Wrap-Up. And next up, we have The Dialogue with Diwa Deboer. This is a mix of politics, power, and culture. And this week, it was his third, I think, or fourth show, which airs 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Fridays. If you missed it today, you can catch the full replay tonight at 10 p.m. until 1 in the morning. This week, Diwa had two interviews. He spoke with Dr. Frank Salter and Brendan Malone. Dr. Frank Salter, academic and researcher from the British Australian community, joined Diwa to talk about his book centered on the concept of Anglophobia and the reality of multicultural politics in Australia and New Zealand. His second guest, Brendan Malone, from Left Foot Media and the Dispatches podcast, joined Diwa to talk about current events in the culture war and the necessity of returning to values of beauty, goodness, and truth, because putting the woke away is simply not enough to restore our culture. Ooh, I like the sound of that. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Weekly Wrap-Up. We are nearly there. We're at the end of the show, and the last show we're talking about is my show, the Up Your Brave Show, which airs on Wednesdays, where we talk about community, connections, resilience, holistic health, spirituality, and more. I host a wide variety of guests, and I'm always excited to hear from you, our listeners, as to what topics you would love me to cover in the future. Definitely get in touch if you have a specific guest request or guest suggestion. You can send a text, 2057 on the text, or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. Otherwise, you can message me on the socials at Up Your Brave. You can tune into the show Wednesdays from 1 p.m. till 4, and the replay on the live stream Wednesdays 10 p.m. and Sundays 1 p.m. So this week on my show, I aired some reflections and connections from the New Earth NZ Festival that I attended, including a very unique audio clip from my fingerprint reading that I had done at the event. And then I have two interviews, both around money. First up, I spoke with Tanya Krevchenko about her book, The Jelly Bean Theory. She offered some insight on empowering youth through financial literacy. And then I had returning guest speaker, author Lisa Black on Earning More by Doing Less. If you want to catch both of those, I suggest that you listen to the full replay. The full show replay includes the music. It includes my commentary, either side of the interviews. But if you just want to cut to the chase, of course, you can go and find the specific link for each specific interview. If you're loving RCR and you want to help us stay on air, then I would say, maybe consider some merch. You can be like a walking billboard, or maybe give it as a gift and help spread the word and help keep New Zealand honest.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at realitycheck.radio/shop.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Weekly Wrap-Up. And what a week it's been, bringing you uncensored discussion, provoking insights, and a variety of perspectives. You can catch the live stream replays throughout the weekend and go and find the full interviews from the Weekly Wrap-Up flashbacks that we shared today. It's all there for you on the RCR app or the website, realitycheck.radio. If I may be so bold as to lovingly invite you to up your brave in some way over the next few days to help us all collectively shift towards the New Zealand that we want to create. Maybe that means sharing a link to an interview that really resonated with you. Maybe that means finally clicking the link and sharing your experience for the COVID inquiry. Maybe that means coming out of the closet when someone makes a comment about truth or freedom or an issue that is aligned for you. Whatever empowered action or courageous conversation you feel will help others to have a reality check. Have an incredible weekend, and I'll see some of you, or hear some of you, on Wednesday for the Up Your Brave show at 1 p.m. And until then, or next time on Friday, this is Natalie Cutler-Welsh saying, that's a wrap.
You've been listening to the RCR Weekly Wrap-Up with Natalie Cutler-Welsh. You can catch the live stream right here on Fridays at 1 p.m. and the replays also live streamed on Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 7 a.m.
Don't forget you can check out all of our replays at www.realitycheck.radio/replays. Thanks for tuning into RCR, Reality Check Radio.